Here we go. WTC The Zero episode is on the air. And I'm going to get everyone to introduce themselves. I am Mo. But we're going to get my co-hosts to introduce themselves by telling us Ginger or Marianne. Brett?
All right. Well, I am going to go with Marianne. And the primary reason for that is because she seems like way less of a headache than Ginger.
And Keith?
Ginger. I prefer taller women.
Chris, which one are you going with?
Definitely Ginger. I got the feeling Marianne gets around. She may all act all innocent, but I'm going with the honesty, Ginger.
All right. Well, gentlemen, as I say, I'm Mo, and the proper answer was actually Mrs. Howell, because she's rich, going to die soon. But barring that, the other proper answer was threesome. Duh.
The professor.
Anyways, the professor? Something you want to tell us there, Brett?
No, that he's for you.
Long time on the island.
So anyways, as I said, this is the Zero episode. And the reason why is because we're kind of putting this one out there as kind of a jump-on point for everybody. In this episode, we're just going to be discussing and kind of introducing yourselves to some of our favorite things. So you try and get to know your hosts just a little bit better. But, of course, that's not how we open. How we open is, as we do every single week, the weekly news. Is it going to be the weekly news on Cub Reporter K again this week, or what's the gimmick there?
I haven't finished my.
No news on yourself?
I have no news for me this week.
No, that's I'm sure.
Shocking.
That will cost us a follower. So here we go.
Yeah,
weekly news with Cub Reporter K.
Well, it was a quieter news week this week. We're leading into WonderCon coming up soon. This weekend, and expected everyone would be making their big announcements there. That said, I do have a couple of news items. One is that the solicits for the June DC Comics have come out. The first issue of Before Watchmen will ship June 6th. That is Minutemen, followed by Silk Spectre the following week, Comedian the week after, and Night Owl the week after, all number ones. And we'll see some kind of staggered schedule for the rest through the rest of the summer. And Steve Gerber's final Man-Thing story will be published as a mini beginning in June, three issues, with art by Kevin Nolan, The Infernal Man-Thing. This is a story that Gerber had been working on since the 80s. It would have been a graphic novel in the 1980s. Gerber died in 2008. And we've got February sales figures. Once again, the top 10 held by DC Comics. Justice League, Batman, Action Comics, Detective, and Green Lantern as the top 5. Marvel holds most of the next 11 to 20 with two issues of Uncanny X-Men, two issues of Wolverine and the X-Men, and then some Avengers titles, filling out most of the top 20, though we still see a couple of DC titles appearing there as well.
I'm just going to jump in a little bit here, Keith, if you don't mind. Marvel's been doing a lot to try and crack that top 10. It seems, and they're failing, so I kind of want to get your opinion, everybody else's opinion, on why they might be failing to knock DC off those top 10 spots, because that's really impressive.
I think that AVX number one will hit that top spot, and probably AVX 1 and 2 coming out in April will take both of the top positions. We don't know yet what effect those crossovers will have, though. We don't know whether the AVX bump will really push up the other books or whether they'll float around what their normal numbers would be.
Brett, what do you think?
Well, I think one of the things that's happened is that, you know, what DC wanted has worked. They wanted the number ones to be a jump on point, an effective jump on point. Whether they were effective or not is not really the issue. But I think that people did jump on. And I think that it's a lot easier to start collecting a book from issue one than from issue 252. So I think that, you know, maybe that's why we're seeing a lot of the DC books in that top 10, whereas people just aren't dropping them because it's fairly early in the run.
How many issues do they have now? Seven? Eight?
These were the number six issues.
The number six. I don't know if it's that early. I mean, what do you think, Chris?
Well, I think, though,
it's still fairly early, and DC's bound to shoot themselves in the foot any second now. I think Marvel has a better product line on a whole. they can use some editorial things to actually cancel them, some books to make their lines clearer. I think they should put out some X-Men 101s just to actually explain to people who the X-Men are nowadays. But, yeah, no, I think this is still going to be short-lived. I mean, 52 was big. It was bigger than anyone expected it to be, but it's still just a one gimmick thing. It'll end. Marvel will take number one spot again.
Now, you say that you think they have the better product line. How do you mean? How would you define their product lines being superior? For what reason?
For what reason? I think, well, I've always been a Marvel zombie. I'd rather read about Spider-Man than Superman. I think they have more writers of significant status working for them. I find their books to be more consistent overall as well. Okay, I find DC has highs and lows between for quality.
Okay, now, because I've been seeing almost every new Marvel book I've been reading has had a high and low in quality, personally, but I could have said the
yes,
same thing.
I think you're jumping around.
I could think that as well in both companies. But one of the things that you said that it looked to me like Brett had, and Brett is a Marvel fan as well, but one of the things that looked to me like Brett had a little question on was when you said that you felt that they had the better writers. Brett, what do you think on that?
The thing is that it really comes down to whether or not you're a Geoff Johns guy or a Brian Michael Bendis guy. And there was a point where, for me, where I thought that I was a Brian Michael Bendis guy and a Geoff Johns guy, and now I seem to be less interested in both of them. And so the problem is, for me, is that, especially with Marvel, like, Bendis just controls so much of Marvel's writing that if you don't appreciate his shtick, then you don't necessarily appreciate Marvel.
Keith, what do you think on that?
Well, it's certainly a problem I've had trying to get back into Marvel. I went through a long period of not reading a whole lot of new comics. I was mostly grabbing trades and such. So as I got back in, I got back into DC first. And as I tried to get into Marvel, and it's just, it's so bogged down. The Avengers books don't work for me. You know, the everyone is an Avenger thing isn't working. X-Men, yeah, I think you need a graduate class to figure out where that book's at. I've been trying for 4 or 5 months, and I still can't figure out the teams. Yeah, it's, I don't know, we're going to see a big shift here, though, because DC's now hitting the, you know, they're hitting the ends of their first arc. Anyone who has said they would try the first arc of a book, 6, 7, and 8 is when those decisions are going to be made of whether you continue. And, you know, the 8s come out the same month as Avengers vs. X-Men begins. So we may see a big swing.
But you know what? While you say that, that might cause readers to books in, you know, spots 30 to 50, but I don't think you're going to see a lot of readers getting off those top 10 books.
Well, it's whether the top 10 just slide down to 11 to 20 when everything else jumps past them. They may retain their number of readers and just have more units selling of the other titles, which would be great.
Okay. All right, and your final news item there, Keith, for the week, the weekly news, not on Cub Reporter K?
Last week we reviewed Superbia number 1 by Grace Randolph, and three of the guys really liked it, and I was not so much. I said the book was well done, but I felt like I had read the story before. And someone took me to task on Twitter about this, and I felt that the argument was so compelling that I should have this Twitterer on the show to give a bit of a correction to me on why I should be into this book. So here to talk about Grace Randolph's Superbia and why I should like it, Grace Randolph.
Hello, Keith.
Hello, Grace.
Hello. Yes. I've been following all the reviews on Twitter, and it's really actually made me become much more active with Twitter. I finally get Twitter. Kind of jumped in at the deep end, and then I saw that you actually yourself posted the review, and I was like, oh, I love podcasts. So I listened to it, and then you were the lone holdout. And I always feel like if someone doesn't like something, you know, I'm not going to attack you, but I think I would like the chance to discuss it. I thought some people on your co-hosts did a wonderful job already arguing on the behalf of the book, but I thought maybe I can turn you, Keith. Maybe I can turn you around.
Well, Chris, my co-host, certainly leapt to the defense of the book. He called it superheroes acting as soap stars.
Yes.
And Desperate Housewives meets the Justice League. So is that where you were going with it?
Well, this is what I was thinking. And I think it's interesting. I'm noticing while most people like the book, there are some people, you know, shocker, who don't like the book. I'm lucky that it's a small but vocal part. And I feel that I'm thinking that those people like yourself will get turned around if they continue to read. Because the first issue is an introductory episode issue. It's an introductory issue. And I find that the people who are not taking to it right away are looking at it still as a superhero book and not as a book about the supporting characters. Do you see what I'm saying?
Okay, so it's really you're using the style of a superhero book to do something different than a superhero book.
Yeah, excuse me. It's like if I took Lois Lane, Alfred, Jim Gordon, and Carol Ferris, and like those kind of characters, and put them all in a book. That's kind of what it's trying to be. And I think that people who are looking at it, it's like I've heard some people have said, oh, well, why don't you invent new heroes? And there's two reasons for that. First of all, I really wanted to take the current heroes and twist them by showing you who they were married to or who they were dating or living with. Because I think that when you, like, let's say, I'm sure you've had this experience, Keith. You go out, you meet somebody you've known for a long time, and you see them in a personal setting, and you meet their spouse or their boyfriend, girlfriend, and it totally changes how you feel about them. It like totally, like, it, or not totally changes it, but twists it. And that's something I was going for. I was also going for the idea of like being realistic of who these people would meet. Who would your archetype, archetypical? I don't know the word. Who would that? Who would that person meet? Because you know you're really at the mercy of your social circles when it comes to who you date. You know, like there might be the most ideal, perfect person for you out there, but if your paths never cross, you gotta choose from the selection you're given. So that was one part of it. I wanted to twist the archetypes. Like for instance, I'm really sick and tired of the fact that Superman always dates Lois Lane.
Right.
I love Lois Lane as a character. By the way, Keith, if I'm talking too much, you break in, and you I don't want you know.
I've had my say, Grace.
Okay.
It's your turn.
All right. Well, you're more than welcome. I mean, I'm happy to have a dialogue. So I don't want you to be like, I think Grace came on my show and just talked and talked and talked. But I really felt like it would just change the character so much if you had a Superman-like character and he decided that he was going to live with a quote-unquote reformed supervillain or supervillain's girlfriend and get her out of jail. Like this is someone who instead of serving time for her horrible crimes, she got to live secretly as the living girlfriend of this hero. And you know, and I was going to explore as the series goes on, what's the dynamic of such a relationship? Are they really in love with each other? How do they really interact? Who has the power there? You know, so I think that's one thing. That's the first thing that I wanted to do. I wanted to twist the archetypes. The second thing is that Superbia is a very crowded book. It's got five couples, I think even six actually when you count Maureen Omega and his wife. And so I think that I would not be able to hit the ground running like I do if, you know, I had to introduce whole new superheroes, their power sets, their origins. Now that said, the characters in Superbia do not have the exact origins and superpowers as the archetypes they represent. For instance, someone was like, Sovereign again, they're like, I'm sure that Sovereign's an alien. And, you know, you don't know that. It's just he's that kind of character. You know, I very much want to stress that the whole point of this book is to twist the archetypes. So they're, I'm hoping, and a lot of people so far have been surprised, some people have not, but most people have, they're twists and turns and there are surprises. So just when you, I would like people to think like, oh, I totally know Sovereign. Oh, I totally know who he is. He's just Superman. He's not Superman. He's based on that character, but he is very different. And also, a lot of people said, oh, there's tons of archetype books. I read them all because I'm an avid comic book reader. I go every Wednesday, and trust me, I am striving for this book not to be like the other books. So if you see anything that you think is very similar, or you think you know where it's going, I would say to you, I believe, think again. I don't know. How am I doing, Keith?
Well, it's interesting the way you put it. The I flip open this book, obviously, and I see the guy in the costume, and I go to what's the guy in the costume doing? And I think your sales pitch is ignore the guy in the costume. What's the person standing on the ground doing?
Yes, you know, and judge, step back from the person. Exactly, Keith. Very well said, Keith. You know, don't, I wouldn't say so much ignore him, but see him through the eyes of the person on the ground.
Well, it's been interesting reading your book. There's an indie called The Red Ten by Comics Tribe, which is doing basically, and then there were none with Justice League analogs.
Oh, cool. I have to admit I have not read that particular book, so you might have to brief me on it. So I apologize. I'm like, I read comics all the time, Keith. And then you're like, well, how about this one? And I'm like, did not read it.
they're still small press, but they're getting there.
I mean,
that's essentially what Watchmen is, though. I mean, essentially, Watchmen's the same, the analogs.
Oh, totally,
to get to telling those stories, yeah.
And I think that Watchmen did, obviously. Allow me to praise Watchmen, Keith.
that is a bold statement, going out on a limb.
I'm going to go for it. I'm going to step apart from the group. No, but I think that, like, I think, Alan Moore was really trying to dissect those archetypes on his own, and that was his sole goal, but by doing it through the archetype itself. And I'm trying to twist the archetype through the supporting character. I mean, I've written for some of the big labels, and I've pitched for them, and I thought it was funny that a lot of the times my recent pitches have come back, and they're like, Grace, you always pitch the supporting characters. And so I thought it was interesting that I wrote a book all about supporting characters. Because they interest me. I mean, I would love to see a Lois Lane ongoing, but if they had an Alfred Pennyworth ongoing, I would read that in a second.
Well, one of my favorite books the past few years was Gotham Central.
Oh, that was a great book.
Yeah, which is really the same kind of idea. What is that town like without Batman in every issue?
Oh, totally. And, like, what is it like to police in the shadow of the Bat? And I thought that, you know, Greg Rucka did such a great job. I mean, I also really liked the way he handled Sasha Bordeaux and how she saw Batman and what it was like to try and do security for him and, like, you know, told from her perspective. I think that was a really great character. And then they turned her into, like, a robot, and I was really upset about that.
So this is a four-issue mini. Is it going to be a closed story? Is it going to open?
I'm going for it, Keith. I hope people write into Boom and they say, please continue the story. You know, I mean, it will have closure. I'm not going to pull the killing where I'm like, if you guys don't make this another series, you won't find out what happens. There will be loose ends, very much like real life. But the main storyline will be resolved. And you'll understand why this was such a pivotal time for the Meta Legion and the house there and their significant others.
And you got a second print on number one, is that correct?
Yes.
Well, congratulations.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Thank you to all the stores who purchased the book and had faith in it. And it was a very nice thing to see. I mean, you know, just people talking about the book is just really wonderful. I've been working on it for over a year with Boom, and it was really nice that we had the time. They gave me the time to flesh it out and get it just right. And so I'm glad that people are interested in it because you never know with anything. A comic book, a movie, a television show. I mean, you just don't know what the reaction is going to be when you unleash it. So.
Well, when's the second issue heading out?
It's going to be in April.
April?
I don't know the exact date. But, you know, I'm going to work really hard to try and get the word out like I did in the first issue. You very nicely invited me back.
Well, I'll tell you what. I will read the second issue. I'll give the first issue another look.
Okay, good.
And then we'll see where I'm at.
Oh, that's good. All right. And I'd be happy to check in with you on each issue. I'll be like, I'll hold your hand through it, Keith. I'll be like, how's it going down? Do you have any questions for me that are non-spoilery about the issue or anything? I mean, like, I embrace discussion. So if you have something, you know, I'm happy to talk about anything, and I promise not to give spoilers for your listeners or you. Did you have a favorite character?
I don't know if I've settled into the book enough. I gotta say.
You're a politician, Keith. You're like, I take the fifth.
I'll save that for the longer interview.
If you haven't picked a character that you like yet, I will tell you that there will be new characters introduced throughout the series. In issue, I don't even want to give it away, but I don't want to give away the character introduced in issue 3 because it's pretty, I was really happy with it, and I was really happy with the way Russell drew it and the way Gabriel colored it. It really turned out exactly how I wanted it to be. But I've already discussed it, so I'll tell everybody. In issue 2, I know that the Jenkins family, Tia Jenkins and Dion Jenkins, aka the Cosmic Champion, and their daughter Zari, who you have not even met, get much more attention in the second issue. I know they were only at the very tail end. They were like, hey, with the party, you know, and I got them in there. But I think people will be nice to see that. And also, you'll get more of Gio, but you'll get to meet him and get to see him more as a character.
Fantastic.
I'm sorry, what?
I said fantastic. Well,
oh, cool.
We'll wrap this up and then we'll come back and do a full, longer interview with you, bring in one of my co-hosts and one of your super fans, because these guys love the book.
Oh, good.
I was the holdout.
you were the holdout, Keith. But, you know, you've been very nice about it. I'm glad you're open to it. And I hope that, you know, I'm really glad that so many people I'm glad that 3 out of 4 people on your podcast recommend Superbia. But I hope that that quarter of you out there and, you know, those of you who haven't totally taken to it, I hope you have faith and I hope you keep reading. It's only a 4-issue commitment and I think you might be surprised.
Well, thanks for your time, Grace. And
Thank you.
We will come back and talk to you in just a few weeks.
I look forward to it.
Fantastic. And that's the news.
All right, awesome. Okay, well, that's cool, Keith. And thank you for talking, doing that and hooking up that interview. And hopefully I can't wait to get a chance to crack heads with her down the road myself, if she'll let me. You know, I am intimidated by any woman who is that much smarter than me, and that's everyone.
Yes, I believe Keith is a smarter woman than you.
Keith is smarter everything than me.
That's valid, yeah.
I'll admit it. I'm the big dumb guy in the podcast who doesn't know to keep his mouth shut. So anyways, let's move on.
You do a very good job of not keeping your mouth shut.
Oh, you know, that I do love myself a lot, despite really having nothing to crow about. Let's move right on here to the 0 issues. Why don't we get Chris to open up with one of those topics. Chris, why don't you introduce some of your favorite of something?
Well, let's go with storylines. In the past, my favorite storylines, and I mean, this comes back to Guilty Pleasures, or ties in with Guilty Pleasures. My favorites are probably the Serpent Society storyline in Mark Grenwald's Captain America, or perhaps Armor Wars, the original Armor Wars in Iron Man.
I love the Armor Wars.
I think it's a great storyline. That is a really great story. You know, the Captain America crossover was really cool. Mark Grenwald, yeah. Awesome.
Totally. Who had Cap Wolf?
Mark Grenwald didn't even have Cap Wolf. That's what it is.
Well, this ties into why a couple podcasts ago I had to try to defend Cap Wolf. Because the Serpent Society storyline actually didn't take place that far removed from Capwolf. He was going great guns and then Capwolf hit.
So, you know, Chris, if I'm cheering for a sports team and they win 10 games in a row and I'm saying they're great, If they lose the next 10 games in a row, I'm going to be saying they're awful. Like, one doesn't really have anything to do with the other. They are what they are at the moment. And Cap Wolf is awful.
I never said it was good. I just tried to defend it. I didn't say it was successful or even agreed that it was a good storyline.
Okay. All right, Keith, why don't you move on? What are some of your favorite storylines or anything else anybody wants to say on those?
I'll jump in with some of my favorites. Certainly, Death of Superman, right up there, is one of my favorite storylines. Cerebus Church and State, really a standout of that series. The Legion 5 years later, which is quite an expansive piece, a couple of titles, some tie-ins. We brought it up as a lost story or as a four for dollar a while back. I just love that stuff. And Age of Apocalypse I'll also put in there as just one of my favorite storylines.
Death of Superman. I talked about how Captain America, Sentinel of Liberty was kind of one of the books really that Brett gave me that brought me back. But that's when I got to be just a casual reader again. The book that got me back collecting was Death of Superman. I'm not doing this podcast today. Death of Superman doesn't come out.
It is a great one. That's kind of why I picked it, actually. That I thought
of. I think those are good choices.
I'd like to congratulate myself on picking that.
Once again, give them to me just really quickly. Run them down.
Death of Superman, Age of Apocalypse.
Own it. Own it.
Cerebus Church and State.
Own it.
Volumes 1 and 2. And Legion of Superheroes 5 years later.
That's the one I don't own, but I own almost all your storylines. So I guess on that perspective, you're a smarter guy than I thought because you're kind of reading what I'm reading.
I find that a lot, too.
Yeah. Anybody else have any comments about Chris's or Keith's books there?
No, I've said it all.
Nobody?
I've clearly said it.
I'm going to say this about Church and State was the book where you really start. I mean, the shift had already begun with Cerebus. But that was the book where you realized the potential of what he was doing and the freedom he had, I think. And so I think that that's absolutely an essential read for anybody.
Yeah, I love my favorite line, my favorite moment in all of Cerebus is the where he's asked to baptize a baby and he just pitches the baby into the crowd and says, "One less mouth to feed is one less mouth to feed."
yeah. All right, Brett, what are some of your favorites?
All right, well, like you, Keith, I just remember in certain cases, I'm going to preface my favorites because in some cases, these are books that I remember reading on a monthly basis when they were coming out. And I just remember thinking that they were really good books at the time. Now, in a couple of cases, I know for a fact that I would read them again and I would be like, that's not a good book. But at the time, I loved the storyline. Now, this one is a good book, and it is the Superman around that death period. Like, there was just a point, it was probably about a year and a half long, that I thought that Superman and the four books were the best titles on the market. Like, every week, I wanted a new Superman book because it was going to push the storyline along, and I was going to be totally into it. Another one, and this is going to seem absolutely crazy, is the Tom DeFalco, Paul Ryan Fantastic Four series around issue 400. I just remember reading this book on a week-to-week basis because I was collecting virtually everything at that point. And the stuff in the storyline that was going on just kept me interested. And I wanted, and I put that book on the top of my pile pretty much all the time. Another one would be G.I. Joe, and I know I've talked about it before, but the Snake Eyes origin and the Serpentor storyline from 49 and 50, I think that's great stuff. Also the Avengers Masters of Evil, Avengers Under Siege storyline, which took place 270 through 277. I love that story, and it's probably my favorite Avengers story of all time. And I also just wanted to touch on the Apocalypse introduction in X-Factor 5. Because I think that Apocalypse is such an awesome character, and I loved X-Factor at the time because I enjoyed what they were trying to do with the characters. And so it's a little bit of a divergence from my normal stuff, but that was when I really liked the X-books. And all the storylines around that time pretty much worked really well for me.
Brett, you know, I think Paul Ryan was a very, very underrated artist.
Oh, Paul Ryan was wicked. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. But you know what? I enjoyed that DeFalco run as well, the Fantastic Four at the time, the death of Mr. Fantastic and all. But now that I look back, I think, God, Malice, what a shitty character.
Well, and like I say, if I were to read that book again, I really, because it's the way I read comics now. I tend to like put them together. And I mean, you just, especially in that kind of case, when you're talking about 1995, you're not going to read those on a month to month basis and just pull them out of your collection one at a time and read them month to month and hope that to get that same feeling. You're stuck pretty much reading, you know, 100 in a row, and you don't get the same feeling. And suddenly it's just like, oh, wow, you know, the storyline just doesn't seem to move nearly as well as I thought it did when I was reading it month to month. So it's difficult.
All right. Anybody else any comments on Brett's?
Well, I was just going to say, I think you might be pleasantly surprised with that DeFalco run. I haven't read that particular story arc in quite a while. But I have been reading some Tom DeFalco recently, and I think his stuff actually flows much better than you think it was. He has a talent that a lot of writers from that era did not. His stuff I think actually reads very well when it's compressed, when you're not reading it month to month.
See, I tried reading his Spider-Girl run, and I hated it, because it was, and maybe the storyline flowed fine, but I just disliked all of the characters.
You quite liked that run, didn't you, Chris?
Yes, actually, that was the run I was referring to when I said I was recently reading, Tom DeFalco. I really enjoyed the entire Marvel 2 universe, which is pretty well all written by Tom DeFalco. But a lot of that is nostalgia as well. It's definitely not a modern book. It reminds me of reading comic books when I first started reading comic books. So nostalgia points are huge on that one.
Yeah, I think a lot of my choices for today are kind of in the nostalgia vein, but yeah, I just didn't feel like that with the Spider-Girl. It just felt really like he was forcing it for me.
Well, especially if you're talking about the second series of Spider-Girl.
Yeah,
after 100 when he restarted.
It ran 100 issues?
It ran for a very long time.
Oh my god.
Yeah.
It did. The sales were quite well. Pretty solid, I think, for most of it, too. I have a DeFalco in my guilty pleasures category that we'll get to later, so as we get to it. But I move on to my favorite storylines, if nobody minds. Now, Keith stole one of mine in Death of Superman. Another one is one that this is the storyline. This is probably the first prolonged storyline I recall reading on a book that, like, I had series or issues, things that I collected, but this is probably the first time I realized that comic books, because you have to remember, when we were younger, a lot of comic books, especially as a DC reader, a lot of DC comic books were one-offs, maybe two parts, tops. DC comics, Marvel had tended to have longer storylines that they weaved in and out. But even then, back in the day, there were a lot more self-contained single issues than there are nowadays. Nowadays, we're commonly used to long storylines, multi-part storylines. It wasn't as common, especially in DC. So when I was reading The Trial of the Flash, and that was a storyline by Carrie Bates, and Carmen Infantino, and I do hope I'm saying his name correct, and that kind of taught me. It opened my eyes again. I think it was like 12, 13 to the potential of medium again further. And it's also, I think, an awesome storyline then and an awesome storyline now that holds up. And for that, I'm just going to ask Keith what he thinks, because he has recently read it.
It was a really great run. I picked it up when I was traveling last year after Scott Kowalczyk recommended it when we were chatting with him at one of the comic shows.
Me recommending it's not enough.
And well, you recommend a lot of stuff, and I write it down, and it all goes into the bin diving pile. But there's a showcase edition of the black and white DC phone books of the Trial of Flash. It only skips one or two issues between the death of Iris West and then the end of that run, which led in, which ended when the Crisis on Infinite Earths was happening. So it's a really great read, $15 or whatever.
Excuse me. Yeah, I know. I absolutely recommend it to everybody. And two other storylines that I recommend were from one of my favorite books, and these were Marvel books. And these are two storylines that took place in the Power Man and Iron Fist series. And one of them is the kind of the story of Chemistro and Curtis and Calvin Carr. Curtis Carr was a character who was the original Chemistro, blew off his leg at the end of an issue. And many, 30, 40 issues later, his little brother ends up taking his chemistry gun and becoming a hero. And you see his evolution from a completely inexperienced, completely lacking in confidence, very neurotic character to this character who realizes he can go toe-to-toe with the Power Man, Iron Fists, and his powers. And then they tie that back in with his older brother and trying to stop him. So that was one of my favorite storylines. One of the storylines that really kicked me off and made Power Man, Iron Fist my favorite book. And then later on towards the end of the run, issues 119, 120, and 122, the Chia Tang and Kun Lung epic, which kind of delved into the backstory of Kung Lung a lot, and Iron Fist and the dragons and all this stuff. And that's one of my favorite story arcs. And as far as if you're reading the really horrible take on Danny Rand and Iron Fist in Secret Defenders, and you want to know how he's done right, that's the storyline to read. Honor, heart, action, comedy. That storyline had it all.
Secret Defenders?
What?
Isn't it called The Defenders?
Or is it? Oh, I don't know. Is it?
It's just called Defenders now. Yeah.
Okay, then just Defenders. It chose. I don't know. It was horrible, so I tried to forget about it.
It should be a secret.
It should be a secret. Nobody should be. The secret should be that it doesn't. Yeah, exactly. That it exists at all, because it's awful. Okay, just Defenders. Screw you, Chris.
Probably will
but
be.
You're right.
Spoiler alert: Matt Fraction probably will not appear on Mo's best favorite writers list coming up.
No, he won't. No, he won't. Let's move on to another category. Do you want to do favorite writers? I'll go first this time. My favorite writer of all time is J.M. DeMatteis. No question. For me, I mean, because very few guys, and I do hope I'm saying his name correct. Is that right, Brett?
I have no idea. It's the way I've pronounced it forever and ever. So.
That's what I'm going on.
All right, we'll continue.
it's certainly an easy name to get wrong, but not only Death of Kraven's Last Hunt, but one of the things that I appreciate about him was his ability to do superhero books and then go do a Vertigo book seamlessly and completely different personalities. So you have a lot of work from him over the years that I've really, really appreciated. He's my favorite. Peter David was one of my favorite writers. Christopher Priest, obviously I've mentioned him before, a writer who I know is much smarter than me, and sometimes I have difficulty following him because of that, but I've enjoyed so much of his work. James Robinson, currently still writing, and so many books over the years that I've appreciated that he's done, and somebody who can follow is going to follow under. I prefer his writing more than his art, though he's an artist as well. But he's done some of my favorite books, and I'll be getting to some of these. That's Kyle Baker. So those are kind of the when I think of writers, those are the guys that pop out at me first. Brett, your turn.
Well, like you, I have to go with J.M. DeMatteis. He was the very first name that I put down when I started writing this list because, like you say, I mean, he can do anything, and almost all of the storylines that he's written. Especially a lot of the creator-owned stuff.
Some of the funniest Spider-Man books I ever read were him. And then he also did Kraven's Last Hunt. And then he would go and do a brilliant story on Vertigo or Epic or, just amazing.
Yeah, no question. Now, no list for me would be complete when you talk about favorite writers without having Warren Ellis involved. I can talk about him pretty much all day and might just at some point, but I just love the guy's writing. I really like Brian Wood. His creator-owned stuff. I won't talk too much about his non-creator-owned stuff, but his quality on his creator-owned stuff is so good for me that that I'll easily talk about it. Max Allen Collins. Now, there's one of those writers that he's written so much garbage, but at the same time, when you want a hard-boiled detective story, Max Allen Collins is totally your guy, and he gives it to you so well. And then the last
guy. That's what she said.
Ring.
Couldn't help it, Brett. You opened the door. I just walked through.
And the last guy that I'm going to mention is Brian K. Vaughan. Here's a guy who's written so many great story arcs recently that he just constantly manages to surprise me with the quality of his books, like from Why the Last Man, Ex Machina, to The Runaways, and maybe another book that's coming up. But at any rate, I think he's a great, great writer.
That, folks, is what we call a tease. That's the foreshadowing there for Brett. We'll be getting into our reviews section later. The We Talk Comics, We Views. Figure out what we're doing. It's called We Views. I'm not going to spell it out for you. Keith, who are some of your favorite writers?
Well, certainly, ones that showed up on your list were close to mine. It's you know, it's funny, in the moment when you write them down. I had very different people, though. Kurt Busiek came up. He's just such a solid writer. I just reread Astro City and Marvels. Garth Ennis, Warren Ellis, Dan Jurgens' DC work. I wasn't much for his, you know, his Thor and that kind of stuff, but his I'll line up for him doing Superman or Booster. Greg Rucka would be one of the newer to me names. I wasn't familiar with a lot of his work until I came back to comics about a year or so ago.
Actually, Rucka is, you're right, he's really terrific. Really a terrific writer. I don't think I've ever read anything I didn't enjoy by him.
And I haven't had a chance to try his new Punisher yet, but I hear it's really solid.
It's interesting because you mentioned Garth Ennis, and I did consider adding Garth Ennis to my list, but the problem is that with Garth Ennis, when I like Garth Ennis, I like Garth Ennis. When I hate Garth Ennis, man, I really hate the Garth Ennis stuff. Like, some of the stuff that he's written is just such complete trash that I was just like, I just can't do it for that reason.
For me, I just find that with Garth Ennis, when I know the creator he's going to be working with, you know, if he's working with Robertson, I'll probably like it. If he's working with Dylan, it will be the best thing I read that month. I was never much for his McRae stuff. You know, the Hitman, etc.
Hitman's totally overrated when I was doing those Christmas books. Completely overrated book. Chris, why don't you wrap this topic up, put a little bow on it, and then start with your next one.
Well, I have to say, you guys mentioned every writer that I really love. I'm going to throw out a couple names. I mean, I will agree with you with most of those. Garth Ennis, Warren Ellis. I love all those guys. A couple of writers that we missed. I think Mark Waid has always been a consistent writer.
See, that's where my issue is I felt him bloody inconsistent. I've read books from him. I thought it was great. And then I've read books I thought were terrible. And I thought it must have been the influence of the artist or the editor making him great.
Really? I mean, you have Peter David on your list, so.
Yeah, but see, the thing is, Peter David, I know, is not good on everything. But Peter David has a sense of humor, is so close to mine, that I found him just very, very... He's like a warm cup of tea. I just find him very, 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 very comforting, often to read. Simple and comforting, though not everything's great.
Peter Milligan is always one of my favorites, whether it's superhero stuff or some of his more, let's just say, Vertigo-ish stuff.
He's good.
And just so we don't sound really old, I'm going to add a newer writer in there. How about Greg Pak? His... World War Hulk or Planet Hulk's storyline was some of the best comics I've read in years.
you know, I think Pac has a lot of talent. I think some of that stuff, the storylines you just brought up, were hurt a little bit by him having to draw them out for too long because they weren't ready for him to do World War Hulk when it was time, and so he had to draw Planet Hulk longer than he needed to. But I think it was a good storyline. I like that too. I read that one. So too bad editorial decisions I think might have weakened it a little bit. But I think he's a talented writer. Yeah, I think he came from the video game world, didn't he?
I believe he did, actually. But if you like the Planet Hulk, that direct-to-video movie actually condenses it a lot, and I'd actually prefer it to reading the series.
I own it, never watched it yet, but probably will.
Oh, it's fantastic.
Hey, if someday maybe we'll watch it. Maybe it'll be a fanboy film review down the road. There's, as I see, Keith make a note to himself.
Well, I'm in the same boat as Umo, actually. I've been sitting there staring at it for eons, it feels like, and it's just like, oh, I should watch that.
Yeah.
Not today.
That's good. All right, Chris, pick a category. Jump in.
Okay, let's go with artists. And I only have one on my list because I felt the need to highlight this particular gentleman because I think he is the best artist working in comic books for probably the last 20 years. Richard Corbin. I just love his stuff. Every frame tells its own story. I can just look at it. And every character seems to have a backstory that I can see in the frame. Just amazing. Leaves me breathless every time I get a book by.
And he has a new book coming out in just a week or two, I believe. And he's got a Dark Horse book coming out.
He's working for Dark Horse now?
That's what
just a joke, because he's done a lot for them. My joke. Not funny to anybody but me.
Rage Moore is the name of the book, Chris. Miniseries.
It's on my list.
You know what? It is a good chance that it'll get at least issue one will get a review from us in the We View section. Now I've spilled out. Now I've kind of spoiled it. What We View stand for?
Oh no!
Oh no!
Way to drop the ball on that one.
It's the worst foreshadowing.
I know. Worst foreshadowing ever. Keith,
my turn.
Favorite artists.
Well, I picked a couple from my early days of collecting and a couple of current ones that I've been enamored of. So the first artist I ever recognized his art from first sight. I didn't even need to look at the credits of the book. John Byrne. I'll also put under this list Mike Grell. Barry Windsor Smith, who I think is the finest artist that has ever worked in comics. And right now I am very into J.H. Williams and Lee Bermejo. I just love what they're doing.
What are they working on right now, since you love what they're doing?
J.H. Williams does Batwoman. Lee Bermejo did Batman Noel, the Joker graphic novel, and will be doing the Rorschach miniseries.
Okay.
And J.H. Williams and Greg Rucka's Batwoman Elegy is a fantastic trade paperback. Hard to find right now because it went into such high demand when Batwoman relaunched with the New 52.
All right, Brent, what are some of your favorite artists?
Well, I didn't actually tackle too many of the newer artists, but again, for me, like probably my favorite artist of all time, and it's Jay Lee. Because I love his work, and it just seems like he shouldn't be my favorite artist of all time, and he's done some average work, but when I see him and when he gets it right, I just think, man, it's so perfect for what I want to see. And so I totally dig his work. Mike Grell, absolutely. He's such a fantastic artist. I would have included Barry Windsor Smith because I think he belongs on here, but I didn't. I included Tim Truman because I think that his art is awesome, like the Hawk World stuff, a lot of his Western work, just really beautiful. Joel Linsner, who I think is a crazy good artist and a horrible writer, but when I look at the Dawn books, I totally want to read them because the art's so beautiful, but I totally can't because the words just make no sense whatsoever.
Yeah, he's ruining all those pretty pictures with words.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
His pinup books were amazing, though.
Yeah, his pinup books are just, like, I mention him simply because when I see his pinups, it's just like, holy crap, that's good. And lastly, I'm going to bring up a team of Steve Epting and Tom Palmer. When they did their work on the Avengers, I thought it was amazing. Like, it was just perfect superhero art. But it's really only been when Steve Epting is with Tom Palmer. When he's with somebody else, he's
wasn't
not
Epting
as
good. Wasn't Epting recently working and doing some really good work on Captain America?
Yeah. And he does. As a general rule, though, I've seen other Steve Epting stuff. And I don't know, I don't remember who inked his work on the Captain America. But,
I'm pretty sure it wasn't Palmer, because I think I took notice of that.
Because he really created that whole Captain America art style, which has now really been mutated into what's available in the Winter Soldier book as well. It's pretty much that whole line has that same art style.
Yeah, that's true, yeah. Yeah. All right, pretty cool. You know what? I've noticed there's some guys who I don't have on my list. I kind of thought somebody would have them, like Michael Golden. You know, who's a legendary artist, or Barry Windsor Smith was mentioned, Steranko. There's some of these guys who I think is interesting that none of us actually have down. I'll tell you some of my favorites all time. Ron Garney is one of my favorite artists ever. Mark Bagley, one of the books we're going to do in our We View section is a book by him that he did, and I've always been a fan of Bagley's art. Dan Breton. I've mentioned this before, a painter, just a different style. I've always really, really appreciated. I would put him up as the best painter personally, I believe, in comics today. I'm going to go old school on three here. Number one, I already mentioned Carmen Infantino. His movement, the way he defined movement in his books, I thought was beyond belief. He really redefined the way I thought heroes could move. Within a panel format, for me personally, so I thought he was terrific. Kurt Swan. Kurt Swan is the template of how to draw Superman, certainly, for most everybody. For me, in many ways, he's just the template of how to draw superheroes. He is, for a crisp, clean, pure comic style, I don't think anybody's ever been better. Except for maybe the completely underrated artist who was, in many ways, I thought, who did Spider-Man, and I thought was Marvel's version of Kurt Swan and did the best Spider-Man ever. That's Ross Andrew. Fantastic artist. The way he drew Spider-Man to me, I say, absolutely my favorite ever. He gave more personality to a character whose facial expressions you couldn't see than anybody else I ever saw. So he's my favorite Spider-Man artist of all time. Spider-Man's certainly one of my favorite characters of all time. So those are my favorite artists, guys. And move on to another category, unless anybody has anything to chime in
actually,
on mine.
Brett has something. I just wanted to remind you Mo, that you missed one of your favorites, Paul Chadwick.
You know what? Paul Chadwick is, but it's not just his art. I do like Chadwick's art and his writing, and I like both because he tries to do something a little bit different. Consistently, always tries to throw another style and work somebody else's style into his own thing, and I do appreciate that. But I don't think I'd quite have him up in my favorite.
Okay, interesting.
I do like that Chris accused Mo of getting his own favorite artist wrong.
Well, it's easy to miss something. There's so many names and so many different things. Brett, well, you had something you wanted to say.
Yeah, what I wanted to say was I just found it really amazing that we can go through all four of us and not a single person mentions Steve Ditko or King Kirby. You know,
it's just
like as much as I love both of them, but they just didn't make that list. And it's not that I'm saying that they're not amazing, but it's I just found it funny that not one of us put them in there.
Well, it's funny
let's face it, it's a pretty big list.
Yeah.
It's true. But you look at Ross Andrew and you see the influence, particularly from it's like he took what Ditko was doing with Spider-Man and evolved it to a more modern era. But I mean, the influence is so huge on his work from Ditko that it's interesting you would mention that. So,
and Joe Kubert. You know, of course, I could probably just go with a bunch of names. And yet Mike Krell makes a bunch of our list. Yeah.
And, it's I mean, we didn't even mention Neil Adams.
We did not even mention Neil Adams. No, that's true. That's and true. I mean, though Neil, the wow, Brett, he all these belongs at that list ones somewhere. And Neil hasn't been able to take over. Brett, what do you say? Doesn't that mean Neil Adams in that interview we did with him that's over in, what, episode number two, that Neil Adams was right and Keith was wrong?
I'll let Neil Adams debate that with Keith.
Yeah, well, maybe we'll give another shot to talk to him again this year. What should we move on to next, guys? What do you guys want to do?
Would you like to do guilty pleasures?
I'll throw in some guilty pleasures. Well, I mentioned this before. Blue Devil certainly is one of my guilty pleasures because it was only good for the first four issues. Because the first four issues, it was a guy who didn't want to be a superhero and just kept on finding himself in situations where he had to be one. He had all this power and he's a good dude. And there was a lot of humor felt from that, a lot of real-world humor that happened. And people kept on saying to him, man, this book's hilarious. And the writer went, hey, I'm doing a comedy book. And pretty soon there was a lot of wacky comedy situations thrown in, and it didn't work anymore, and it wasn't that funny. But it kept getting wackier and sillier, and I still loved it. I don't care. I love the character. So Blue Devil the original Blue Devil run is certainly one of my favorites. Speaking of books that really didn't work, but I can't help but love Captain Carrot and his amazing zoo crew. I don't care. Yeah, okay, it sucked. Okay, all right. It's not really
that
funny.
You're a moron.
Really that totally didn't
really
suck.
Really good for kids. Ooh. Oh, it's terrible. I love it. I love me some Captain Carrot and the Amazing Zoo crew.
Fastback.
Here's another one that – what's that?
Fastback.
Yeah, Pig Iron. Dude, I love me some Pig Iron. So.
Hallie Cat Abra. Come on, yo!
Hallie Cat Abra. Yankee Doodle. Poodle. Yankee Poodle, I mean. Oh, it's terrible, but I love it. So anyways, Rubber Ducky. Come on. Or Rubber Duck. Was he just Rubber Duck? He was Rubber Duck. Whatever. Awful, but I loved it. So anyways, I'm going to move on to here. So one, we're always slamming this guy, and deservedly so. But I love me the from Oni Press, the Clerks and Jay and Silent Bob books. I don't care, because when he's writing Clerks and Jay and Silent Bob, he's in his wheelhouse. That shit's good. Yes, Red State absolutely blew. And comic book men would
not
be
that
like,
bad.
Yes, it is. And comic book man would be like putting your head into a vice and squeezing for all your might to continue watching. But, man, do love me some so Clerks and Jay and Silent Bob. And Tom DeFalco's character that he wrote when Green Goblin was a superhero didn't last long. Not really that good, but I loved it. When a kid got the powers and got the costume and had some fun with it. So, Brett, what are some of your guilty pleasures?
Well, again, another guy that we kind of give a bad time to, Len Wein, for his Blue Beetle series. I think it lasted like 25 issues. I mean, I love Ted Kord. 24 issues?
24 issues.
All right. I love Ted Kord, and again, most of the stories weren't all that good. I just remember, like, I think it was issue 2, where it was like, conflagration, you know, some big inferno fire character, and it was just like, oh, this is silly comics at its peak. I also loved Adolescent Radioactive Black Belt Hamsters, because during that funny animal craze, I just thought that they were the one that stood out to me the most. I loved TMNT, but they stood out the most. Boris the Bear also around that time. It just killing every single character possible in the world. Loved it. Danger Girl, which I was very surprised to like, but I thought it's a good fun series. And pretty much all of like the Wildstorm Team 7 stuff. For me, it's a totally guilty pleasure because I'm not sure why I like it, but there's just something about it that works for me. And finally, one of my favorite characters of all time, the Phantom. So many horrible, horrible books, but just a character that I really like, and so he's a guilty pleasure.
Keith, jump in.
I really like this category because the idea of the Zero episode is for people to get to know more about who we are, where we're coming from, and I think that this category, more than anything else, tells you a lot about us. I'm going to put in the Eric Larson verse.
What did it say about me then? I'm just curious.
I'll let our listeners draw their own conclusions. The Eric Larson verse, I'm going to put, I've lost track of Savage Dragon over the years, but when he was doing Freak Force and Super Patriot and Savage Dragon as the key book.
Also,
and then
I love that shit too.
And it was just so goofy and so fun and so out of control. It was disappointing, actually, when he streamlined back down to only one book, and that's kind of when I lost interest, was when he started focusing more on Dragon and less on the odd characters around, all these characters that he came up with when he was a teenager and, sat in a shoebox. DC crossovers from the 80s and 90s are a guilty pleasure. I love these crossovers. Legends, Millennium, Zero Hour, Invasion particularly. I love Invasion. I love the core book where you don't have to read anything else, but every other book that you read just expands the world that's going on. And that ties into one of my guilty pleasures that is has become a bad word in comics and has become a bad word in the social media world, Twitterverse, message boards. I love continuity. I love how all these things fit together and how, the brick wall gets built by piece on piece that lock together, and the universe makes sense because of all the different stories that have been told. And it's such a hated thing now that you should be focusing on how these characters relate to each other and how their past events relate to each other. And probably my last guilty pleasure is disrespecting Alan Moore. He wants me off his lawn. He wants all of us off his lawn. He's a crazy old man. It's awesome.
He wasn't anybody's favorite writer.
No.
That's because he's crazy. And besides, I mean, we all know that.
But he's done some absolutely brilliant work.
Absolutely. Well, of course, but we already kind of, it's, I mean, I think that's one of the keys about this Zero, is that we're not mentioning a lot of the prototype greatest works of all time, because everybody knows that as a comic book fan, you generally like the Watchmen, the V for Vendetta. Absolutely. Alan Moore's at the top of that list. But, if we mentioned, it's our favorite book, it's Sandman. Well, of course, everybody and their dog is mentioning Sandman as their favorite book. So the important thing for us is to be able to mention books that maybe aren't at the top of everybody's list.
I wouldn't put Alan Moore in my top writers, no matter what rules we put to this, though, because...
No question.
Yes,
because his ABC stuff is generally garbage.
I haven't liked anything he's done since the mid-90s, I'll call it. Probably Wildcats was the last thing I liked.
Ugh.
And most people don't like it. So I hung around longer than most.
I wish this was a video podcast right there so people could have seen Brett.
Yeah, that Wildcat story. I hated most all of his work for Image, and the Wildcats was awful, I thought.
Chris, why don't you?
You guys put some interesting books out there, and I have to agree with you. I love a lot of these books, the Team 7 stuff that Brent mentioned. I love the Grifter book especially. Mo, I have to say you're a moron for liking Captain Carrot. That was a horrible, horrible, horrible book. But my guilty
pleasure. Hence the category!
But my guilty pleasure actually is written by the same gentleman, so I can't really, fault you too much for that. I thought Roy Thomas wrote most of those.
Oh, you're right. Scott Shaw was the artist. You're right.
Yeah.
Roy Thomas. Yeah. Joey Cavalera.
When I'm too tired to decide what to read, when I'm just having a bad day and don't want to make any decisions, what I reach for is Savage Sword of Conan. I own the phone book editions of the black and white Savage Sword, and just pick up anywhere and start reading. Art is fabulous. I can't say there's any continuity issues to worry about. Just a good non-thinking book. And
that's good. I was worried you were going to say All-Star Squadron.
No. Not a big fan of All-Star.
You know, All-Star Squadron in that he wrote that, what was it, that crossover with All-Star Squadron and JLA and Justice Society? That, in the crossover in all those books where, do you remember the, know what I'm talking about? Where the,
yeah, I think it was a four-issue miniseries.
We were talking about it before. No, it wasn't a miniseries, no. It was within their own books. And we were talking about this, this is on a, one of our earlier episodes. Crisis on Earth's Prime. And he wrote it. And, it was in all three. Crisis on Earth Prime is in Justice League, America, All-Star Squadron, and Justice Society of America. I throw that in as one of my favorites, I mean, storylines. I didn't put it in at the time, but you talk about this guy, and this was awesome.
I'm glad I brought it up.
I think Roy Thomas deserves some sort of Guilty Pleasure Roy award. Savage Sword of Conan, one of my favorite books, and one that'll always be on the top of my pile.
So, okay, Chris, why don't you jump into your next category then?
Okay. Let's do the category of things that we have never read, major series and like that, that we feel are deficiencies in our comic book fandom. And I have to admit, I had to think long and hard on this one, and then it came to me on what I have never read, and it's a shameful disgrace that I expect to be mocked for, deservingly so, is that I stopped reading Cerebus after the Mother's storyline and skipped ahead to the last book to read The Death of Cerebus. And I've never come back to it. I own all the books. I just have never actually read the entire storyline. So I stopped reading after Minds.
Actually, Chris, I just want to break in because the fact of the matter is that Cerebus is on my list because I only got halfway through the run. I haven't even read the last series, like the last storyline.
You know what? What was it? What it came after Church and State? What was after that?
Jack's Story and then Melmoth.
So I stopped at Church and State.
So basically what you're saying is we have about, you know, 20 years of bluffing each other on this one.
Pretty much.
I read every goddamn word of that last book where he rewrote the Bible.
You've read it twice.
No, the last one, I will never read those pages again, but I did read every word the first time where he rewrote his version of the Bible.
And it's an excellent book. I don't know why I've never gone back.
I am serious. Oh, yeah, everyone says Cerebus. Cerebus is a classic.
You could have been just like us.
Every word.
So it turns out that you're actually in the majority, Chris.
Half that book was just text pages, and they were horrible. I had no idea where he was going. The answer was nowhere. So I really think you should, get yourself focused and read those books.
Truthfully, when I was collecting the individual issues, I was just reading the letters pages.
All right. Chris.
Keith, you want to move on to some of your guilty, missed or never reads?
Well, I've had a couple that came up. One that came up recently, actually, is the reason why Brian K. Vaughan didn't show up on my list of writers is that I realized I just haven't read enough of his work. I love Why, but I've never read Ex Machina. And this one came up just a couple of days ago. I was chatting with a friend, and so I thought about putting him on the list. I'm like,
Wait. I don't remember what episode it was, but I mentioned something about this guy, and I'm going, and then he did something else which is supposed to be terrific too. And we were talking about Kim Vaughn, and I said, he did something else. I was talking about that book. And I said, he did something else that was supposed to be terrific too. I can't remember what it was. And you said it was Ex Machina. It's supposed to be, it's awesome. No, you said it was great. You didn't say, I think it's awesome. You said it was great. So you're telling me you are working me?
Well, what?
Are you sure you don't want me on We Talk Wrestling?
I believe what you just said is that he did something else that's supposed to be great, and Ex Machina is supposed to be great. So I
said this, but you said, yeah, it's Ex Machina. Okay, you're right. You're right. You're catching me, you tricky son of a bitch.
I have a bad of words.
I have actually read all of Ex Machina, and it is probably my least favorite full run of Brian K. Vaughan. Just, it's an interesting story, and I do think it has its great moments, and I can see why other people think it's great, but it's not my favorite of his runs overall.
Well, without spoiling it for anyone else, including me, I did hear that the whole run turns on a dime on the last, like, three or four pages of the last issue. Would I like it? You know me. Would I actually like it? Should I
actually? No, I do think you would because there it's a lot of politics and stuff like that. So I think that with your interest in politics, it would probably stand up for you.
All right. Well, one that Brett will have some words with me when I say this one. I've never read Starman by James Robinson.
Actually, neither have I.
Really?
You know what? That's on my list.
No, I've actually only read like about. I've only read like 25 issues. I never finished.
I never read that many. I mentioned this at him as one of my favorite writers, and I don't have that. I haven't read it. I've read the one Christmas issue you guys made me read, which was awesome.
Chris, have you read that?
I've read it. The issues. I have the deluxe. Like $50 books that there was like 8 of them. I love this series. It's a series that I go back to constantly. I'm ashamed to call you my friends.
What's the problem? You've read it 4 times, so you've used up hours.
Oh yeah. And that's the way it works.
And the other one that is, this one is so canon, and it is so in the big titles of all time, Alan Moore's Swamp Thing. I've read, I think, 2 issues because I was never able to put a collection together. And I keep meaning to buy the trades or the hardcovers that just came out, but until I actually had them all sitting together, I wasn't even going to start reading them, which is why I never have.
You and I are totally in the same boat when it comes to the Swamp Thing because, you know, for the longest time with our collections, it was the same thing. We had, like, the same issues for a while. And then it's funny because I've wanted to read it quite a bit. And every time I'm at the store with, like, a gift card or something like that, it's always just like, oh, look, it's the Swamp Thing hardcovers. And there's number 2. Well, that's inconvenient. So yes, that one I've never read either. That is probably one of the most serious of mine. I might as well just jump into mine.
Jump into yours, Brett.
But I think that another one of mine is actually I've never read all of the Fourth World books. Now maybe some people would say that that's a good thing, but
it's not.
You know, as a Kirby fan, you know, I generally think that, you know, it's just like I should read the fourth storyline. But I just don't do it. And then probably the biggest one of all is I have never read Understanding Comics.
What? What?
I don't know how many times you've recommended that to people. What?
Of course, because it's one of those cases where, based off of the volume of recommendations to me, then I recommend it to other people.
It?
Yes.
You've owned it.
Yes, I do.
Years?
Oh, you think you would have read it by osmosis by now. You've owned it for 20 years.
Do you own Reinventing Comics?
Maybe. Can't remember. Don't think so, actually.
Well, Brett, you're officially kicked off the friggin' podcast. Actually, once we get to my list, it's pretty embarrassing, so...
Man, and I felt bad for the Cerebus thing, but
yeah,
my
like,
God,
like,
guys.
I only read the first half of Cerebus. I'm like, dude, that means you've read all of Cerebus you need to read. Like,
yeah, I love the first half.
Like, so there's nothing you haven't read, Chris? Jeez, actually, come to think of it, it's Chris. There's nothing he hasn't read, folks. That is not...
Or read twice.
Yeah. Yeah, we should be doing, if we haven't read it, we should say it. And if Chris hasn't read it 5 times, he should have to say it.
You know, I have Grell in my favorite artist, but I've never read Warlord. Same issue where I never was able to put a collection together, so I never started reading it.
I've looked at okay, there's a solution for you, though. They came out with a showcase edition.
Yeah, but only of 25 issues, so it still isn't a collection.
Yeah, I have the showcase edition, and I still haven't read Warlord either. But I think the art.
I'm waiting for the second showcase edition to come out and finish his run.
All right, I don't want to get mine out of my way because I'm feeling bad about this stuff. Hosting this show.
Get it off your chest.
This feels like this should be like freeing. This should be like standing up and saying, "I've been sober for one day." This should be
for one
I'm
minute.
Afraid to
that's
put
right.
This list out there. I'll throw out this one for right now. I never read Sandman.
What?
My wife has read Sandman twice.
Yeah, no, I've read it. Never read any Sandman. You know, the only Sandman I read was, I think, the Sandman crossover with Golden Age Sandman. That's about it. Like, and that was no good.
One of my favorite
comics. You know, it's one of those ones where it was like, when I started getting back into comic books about that time of death of Superman, it was already like issue 20, and then there was all these trades, and then I kept on hearing how great it was, and then I figured I'd wait till it finished, and then it finished, and then I was waiting for a collected volume, and then I was lazy, and then I never read it. And now I have it all, I still haven't read it. I've gotten this far without reading it. I've only read a handful
like
of issues.
Me never seeing Titanic because I just refused to see Titanic just, and now I won't see it based on principle.
I've never seen Titanic.
All right, solidarity, brother.
I've seen it once.
I've never seen that film.
And I'm just a James Cameron fan. The hate was focused.
I'm not so sure. I don't like James Cameron more than any of you guys, but I've
yeah, you probably do.
Like I say, I've only read a handful of issues of Hellblazer, if that counts. What are some of your favorite Garth Ennis books, everybody?
Garth Ennis, Hellblazer, Preacher.
Didn't read it.
The Boys.
Didn't read it.
Heartland, which is probably my favorite of his.
Didn't read it.
Pride and Joy.
I didn't read Preacher. Preacher was on that list of things I haven't read. It's not as bad as Sandman, but it's pretty close. How about Warren Ellis? You guys want to mention some Warren Ellis as some of your favorites?
Transmetropolitan.
I've read a few issues, but not the whole run.
He did a great
exercise. I'm losing respect for you now, man.
I'm not positive now you've read any comics.
What you'll notice is Jake. That if it's...
He actually just keeps rereading Power Man and Iron Fist.
It's Captain Carrot and his Amazing Zoo Crew.
We may actually, at this point, be able to use Addy more than we can use Mo with the base of knowledge.
It's possible. I have not read Speedball the Mass Marvel.
I've never read Speedball the Mass Marvel. I'll admit to that one right now.
What the hell are you doing on this podcast, man? Yeah, I mean, I haven't read a lot of Ellis, and I haven't read a lot of Ennis, and the thing is, you'll notice two things here. The Invisibles, didn't read that. Like, where's some of Morrison's more famous stuff? Probably didn't read it. Read Animal Man. Name some of his other ones. I probably didn't read it. What you'll notice is not a lot of mature reader books and not a lot of British writers. Historically, that stuff's just not stuff that I gravitated towards or read, even though everybody talked about how good it was, because when I did try it some, it just wasn't my thing.
Sad, man. That's awesome.
Good.
Oh, I need a minute.
I think it's at least you know how many times I've read? I've read Understanding Comics 5 times and Reinventing Comics 3 times. So blow me.
You can't say that. You only say that in a mature readers comic. Well, that was fantastic.
You're welcome.
That was one of my
I told you, it was like getting up and standing in front of everybody and saying, "My name is Mo and I'm alcoholic." It should have been freeing like that. Instead, I'm just damn embarrassed. But hey, how good.
My name is Mo and I'm not much for Neil Gaiman.
There we go. There we go.
You know, hey, look, you know, I love
one of my, bring up Ross Andrew is one of my favorite artists. I've read comic books.
You know, I love Sandman, but I find that almost anything else of Neil Gaiman that I read, like the past, like since Sandman ended, is like, hey, it's Neil Gaiman, and it's not really that good, and I don't know how to tell anyone that.
I read Stardust.
I like Stardust. That's probably the last thing I did like. There's not too much.
Did you read his novel, Gods and...
American Gods.
American Gods. I like that a lot.
That I liked. That was probably it for his books, too, though.
So what category do we have left? Is the last one we have here favorite books?
Favorite books.
Favorite books. Just like runs or big series or complete series.
Let's just say favorites, and I guess I'll get to go first. Let me talk about some of the first book issues, first things I ever collected. One of the first series I ever collected regularly was when I was like five, six. That would have been DC Comics Presents. Superman and a different Death Star every single week introduced me to one of the reasons why I love the DC Universe is I have a really strong knowledge of those obscure DC characters, those B and C list characters, and that's from this book. World's Finest was another one that was featured a Superman and Batman story, and then afterwards would be a series of small backups. That's where I got introduced to a lot of smaller characters like Hawkman again, and this would have been one of my earlier collectors again when I was a little kid, Hawkman. This is where I was introduced to my all-time favorite character, Captain Marvel, Shazam, as he's now known. So I'll throw those out there. When I got a little bit older, I moved away from DC. I was collecting Amazing Spider-Man and Power Man and Iron Fist. So Power Man and Iron Fist was my favorite Marvel book. My favorite hero would have been Spider-Man. My favorite book would have been Power Man and Iron Fist, obviously. And then from there, I'd say I'm going to bring up a few things that are a little more recent here. You know, not currently published, but published in the 90s. A little more recent for me, you know. And, okay, this was written by a British writer, James Robinson. Golden Age, the prestige format miniseries Golden Age that he did is one of my favorite books of all time. It's just awesome. So anyways, but yeah, I mean, Golden Age, I love that. Love that. I think that's a tremendous, tremendous series. Why I Hate Saturn is my favorite anything. I mean, when I say favorite book, favorite movie, favorite comic book, favorite anything, TV show, Why I Hate Saturn by Kyle Baker is my favorite anything. Put me on an island, get to pick one thing. It's not too long. That's what I picked still. It's my favorite anything. So I'm going to mention a couple other books that I am a huge fan of by the same guy, Kyle Baker. I Die at Midnight, which is awesome, and the highly underrated, almost as good as Why I Hate Saturn, You Are Here, which is one of the books that every new person doing a series, a book, independent or anybody else breaking into the industry should read, because it's one of the books that pushes the medium and the way it can be used in a different way and a brilliant way. And it's the dialogue and the characters are so amazing. And one of my all-time favorite books, I'll just talk about this prestige format special graphic novel, The Death of Gru. Damn it, going to read a Gru story? That's the one to read. The Death of Gru. It's awesome. Brett.
Well, I will very quickly mention a book called Why I Hate Saturn. I think it's the greatest book of all time. I love Why I Hate Saturn. It's an amazing book. You already said everything we needed to know about it. I love Terminal City by Dean Motter and Michael Lark, the two miniseries. I thought that they were... I love the kind of dystopian, utopian elements, and I just think that it's a great miniseries, two miniseries. I'm also going to... I couldn't decide between the two, so it's Brooklyn Dreams / Moonshadow by J.M. DeMatteis add-ons, because I love the stories in both, and they're just incredible stories. I'm going to go off the beaten path a little bit, and I'm going to go with Roberta Gregory's Naughty Bits, which is, to me, just such a funny, funny book. Even though I'm a guy and it's about women's problems, I still thought it was pretty damn funny.
You should add a proviso that people should not watch the cartoon show.
No, they definitely shouldn't. But as far
yeah,
as,
I
like,
know. I just felt everyone should be warned on that one.
But the bitchy bitch character is Babu for the actual comic, and I am going to top my list off with Fables And now it's interesting when I talk about Fables, because when I read it through issue 75, I thought that it's probably my favorite book of all time. Like, and I don't care, even over top of Sandman. Like, I read it and I was just like, holy crap, this book is stunning and beautiful and amazing. And I've really only read a few issues past that as I like start gathering the trade paperbacks. But one of the things, now, I know Mo was not a fan of Ferrest. I know Mo wasn't a fan of Ferrest. And I happened to see a tweet come out this last week that said that Willingham should have stopped writing Fables after 75, because all he's doing now is tarnishing the first, like, storyline, major storyline. And so I got to tell you, I'm actually getting worried about going back in and reading more Fables, just because it's just like, I love these first issues so much that I feel like it's almost like a bad epilogue in a movie. I don't want to carry on if it's not going to be good enough. And that's it. Oh, and Understanding Comics. I love that book.
Changed your life. Changed your life, that did.
And every book by Rob Liefeld. Keith, go ahead.
I didn't get to it when I did the things you've never read, but I've never read any of Fables. Not even Ferrest is actually the only thing I've ever read.
So I've actually read more Fables than you.
You have, yeah.
Suck on that, Sandman lover. I haven't read much.
I will read it all in a go, I guess. I'd have a better shot of reading it if they end the series.
Then you know what? I've only read the first issues of. I've only read the first six or seven issues of Why Last Man, because I started reading it like issue 38 and I wanted it to finish. And now, of course, it's so much to read and I'm too backed up. But it's another one.
My favorite books: Transmetropolitan, Preacher, DMZ. These are from writers that we've heard about recently. Gotham Central, which I just discovered a couple months ago, long after the series ended. Greg Rucka and Ed Brubaker, amazing series. And I'm going to go with Booster Gold.
I was going to say that Booster Gold is like one of my least favorite.
How about going with the Justice League?
Pardon me?
How about going with that Justice League? How about going with the Justice League with Booster Gold and Blue Beetle?
I would go with Booster's two solo series, actually. I think that the John stuff and the Jurgen stuff in Booster Volume 2, where he goes back in time to spend more time with Ted Kord, amazing stuff. I love those books. And yes, they have that emotional impact because of the Giffen JLIs, but I like anything that really narrows the focus down to Booster. I was tweeting with Dan Jurgens the other day and said, I don't want Batman in because I really want to focus down on Booster, and there's just extra characters in the book right now. Taking focus away.
Are you done?
Now we pause for typing.
Are you done?
Yeah, I'm done.
All right, then. Chris.
I guess I'm up. The book that made me fall in love with comic books, the first book I think I collected month to month, was ElfQuest, and I still love it. Other favorite books of mine, YA8 Saturn, and I can't believe nobody else mentioned Strangers in Paradise, because I know it's a favorite of all of ours.
I thought Terry Moore would get a favorite writer for somebody. I was actually very surprised.
Yeah, no, I loved The Invisibles by Morrison, which... Mo hasn't read. I can't believe that. Sandman was a favorite. And Beanworld is a constant stay for me in the comic book world.
I've read Invisibles twice. I still have no idea what's happening in the third book.
Well, I didn't say I understood Invisibles. The last dozen, I just said I read it.
Oh, yeah. If giving it a try is what we're talking about here, I think I've read three issues. I don't think I read them back to back. I think it was like issue 3, issue 7, and issue 18. I think I knew as much as you guys.
They've announced an omnibus for the late summer or fall of every issue of Invisibles. It's going to be 1,500 pages. But because the Invisibles, the storyline actually ends in December of 2012, which seems so far away at the time, they want to get it out before before what Grant Morrison tells us is the end of the world.
Hey, Chris, I'm sorry, could you just mention yours again? It was ElfQuest, Invisibles,
Elf
what else?
ElfQuest, Invisibles, Bean World, Sandman.
You wouldn't know anything about that, though.
Strangers in Paradise. And Miss Tree.
Oh, yeah.
Miss Tree, Max Allen Collins. And I think that's it. I reserve a right to mention something on a further podcast.
Well, you know what? I have been making a list that I'm going to be going through as we do our shout outs at the end of things that now have popped into my head that you guys have popped up that are some other favorite things that I'm not going to go out without mentioning. But let's get into the WeViews section. Keith, why don't we get you to open up on this?
Well, let's start with Saucer Country. Paul Cornell, who wrote the first few issues of Stormwatch, which were incredibly weird but a bit hard to understand because he had so much happening, so many characters. Saucer Country's focused way down on a female governor who is about to start running for the presidency. And there's some wacky stuff happening around her. There seems to be some missing time at the top of the issue. The people that she's starting to surround herself with to get her into the presidency are compromised people, to say the least. I really, really like this book. It had my attention. It wasn't too heavy as far as space aliens are coming kind of stuff, but it's teasing out a couple of different threads. I'm hoping that all the stuff that he was trying to do on Stormwatch, but it was kind of getting bogged down in 6 or 10 characters, he can do in a simpler set of characters and, you know, really explore some of this wackiness that he has in his head. I liked it.
Chris, what do you think?
I didn't like it, actually. It's not a bad book. From a personal perspective, I really don't like the Area 51 thing at all. The stereotypical aliens just sort of bother me. And I didn't find any of the characters particularly likable. I could come back in 5 or 10 issues and change my mind. There's nothing offensive about the book. I just couldn't. Just the first 22 pages or so did not intrigue me at all. So I would not be buying another issue.
Keith has a rebuttal.
I just want to be clear at this point. This is not a thinly veiled ploy to get Paul Cornell to come onto the podcast and defend his book. This is an honest review from Chris.
That said, we'd love to have him on. Yeah, I'm going to go in on this. You know, I think there's one of the issues that I have with current comic books and these number ones. I'm consistently getting this is after it's over, I felt like I've watched the first 10 minutes of a movie and I'm still getting everything explained to me. I think the pacing of comic books and the I don't know if it's the influence of movies or the influence of television, the comic books never have contain a full story or this in the old days would have been told in four, this entire 22 pages would have been told in 4 pages and then got to the meat of the story. Like it's just so much setup and so much, I don't know what the hell's going on. I'm not going to be able to enjoy this until I get the trade paperback. Then it might be pretty good. Potential? Sure. Read the number one? Absolutely not. Brett?
Well, it read to me a lot like a Vertigo book, which it is a Vertigo book. Now, the truth of the matter is that I seem to really like Vertigo books. So at the end of the book, I just liked it. It was like I was kind of confused for a little while. But at the end of it, it was just like, man, that's a Vertigo book. Excellent. I'll read it.
All right. You know, two hits and two misses.
I just don't need anything more than Vertigo, I'd say.
Two hits and two misses then. Brett, next book.
All right. I'm going to talk about Avengers Assemble. My first question when I popped it open was actually, is this a movie tie-in book? You know, because I looked at it and I'm like, okay, well, all the characters on the cover are the ones that are in the movie. And then I read it and I was just like, no, No, I guess it's actually an Avengers title. This is an Avengers title. It's the single worst Avengers title I've ever read in my existence. Brian Michael Bendis has fallen so far off the cliff of interesting writers to me that he's like buried somewhere down in Garth Ennis's hell. And Mark Bagley, man, that guy, when he was on Spider-Man way back in the 80s and early 90s, I thought, wow, he's a tasty penciler.
And his now, Ultimate Spider-Man was fantastic.
Yeah, and now because his stuff with Brilliant with Bendis, I hate it. I think he looks like some sort of junior penciler who hasn't even worked his way out of college, and whoever the inker is a piece of trash, because Bagley is just looks like garbage in this book. Like, I hate the writing, I hate the art, I hate the characters, I hate pretty much everything about this book. It's probably the single worst book I'll read. Oh, wait, until another one that we're going to talk about.
Oh, wait. Brett, so what do you think of it?
I probably won't read another. Well, at least until it ties in with Avengers versus X-Men.
Oh, yeah, I'm going to have to. Keith?
I had similar confusion when I looked at the cover, and you know, it shows all the characters that are in the film. And I thought, okay, well, it's a tie-in. Okay, it's not a tie-in, but it's going to be, they've come up with some way to have an in-continuity book that happens to have these characters in it as a way to, you know, get new people into the movie, which is a good idea. And then inside the book, it's totally other characters and the Hulk's not in the same place. And I stopped probably two or three times in this book and really, and actually thought hard, what on earth am I reading? I have no starting point for this book. I have no context. I don't understand what has happened before. It seems a big deal that they've built a building. I don't know why. I honestly was so confused by this book. And it's because I don't follow the event. I mean, partly because I don't follow the Avengers books, but
I can tell you why it's a big deal that they have the building.
Okay.
It's because when Avengers Mansion was destroyed in Avengers Disassembled, they stopped and didn't want to form an Avengers team for a while, even though they had the new Avengers. And for a fairly long time, they didn't actually have a headquarters. So I'm pretty sure that it's because now the Avengers have an official headquarters kind of thing.
I was going to ask that. I was going to ask that, Brett, because I know the Avengers Mansion got blown up, and I missed the Avengers Mansion. And then I'm seeing this thing, and I'm like, well, they've been around. That was 8 years ago. So the last 8 years, these guys have had no place to hang out, no place to go
home.
Well, no,
they have.
Like 8 years?
The problem is that in, like, 2006, they made a big deal out of them having a building, too. So I'm, but, again, that was Bendis, so I don't know.
You didn't accidentally grab a reprinter.
How about this? How about that? Avengers Mansion was unique, and now they have a ripoff of Four Freedoms Plaza or whatever the hell they're calling it this week.
The Baxter Building? Yeah.
Brutal.
The Avengers have had a tower for a while, though.
Oh, yeah, since 2006,
But, who cares? You know. Still a stupid idea. Go back to the mansion. Something unique. But other than that, Chris, what do you think?
I actually have been reading the Avengers. I stopped a little while ago, but thinking of this book, I have to agree. It's sort of the Superman of the Marvel Universe. Is they're already trying to tie into a movie that no one's seen yet. Story didn't make a whole lot of sense. I hate the Hulk in Avengers, always have, despite the fact he's a founding member. The book fails. I like Bendis, but he's phoning it in. He has too many books.
That's
not sure. Not recommending this book. It's a poor start to a new series.
I'm gonna throw my review in here. You know what? I think a lot of people are gonna like this book. I'm not as hard on it as you guys. I think a lot of people are gonna like this book. I think a lot of people like Bendis' style. I don't think a lot of people will be as hard on the art as Brett was. I think a lot of people just enjoy the characters and Bendis' dialogue. I find his dialogue to be much of that wink, wink, look how clever I am shit that I was talking about Fraction having, Matt Fraction having, that I didn't like. But yeah, I mean, I do think this was, I think it's a pretty good book. It's just, I think it's a pretty good book for people who are currently reading Marvel and really into the product, and not a book at all for people like me who aren't as much into the current product, who aren't watching it. And so I didn't get as much out of it. I didn't understand it as much. But I don't think it's a poor book. You know, that's just kind of my view on it. So let's move on to something that I did think was a poor book. What's it called?
X-Men Season 1. X-Men Season 1.
Season 1. I got 8 pages in. I quit after 8 pages on this thing. I look at it. I'm like, it's big. Great cover. One of the great covers. And then I'm like, who the hell is this chick pretending to be Jean Grey? Because this isn't Jean Grey. This is a spoiled brat teenager. And I know she's supposed to be a teenager in the book, but do you have to make her a bitch? Like, just to be, like, modern and hip, and this is what kids are like now, and this is really shitty writing? And what about the Jean Grey I know who's the heart and soul of the X-Men, who gives them their conscience in a lot of ways, and this character doesn't? And 8 pages in, and Scott Summers falls on her, and she makes a joke about fucking. Sorry, I can't put it any other way. I quit. Brett?
Well, I picked up the book, and I opened the book, and I looked at the writer's name, and his last name is Hopeless. And I just had this, like, concern that it was going to be some sort of sign or portent of the actual book. I was right. Because the book, you know, I actually did make it all the way through this one. I felt it needed to be slogged through. But, wow.
Did you have any problems with the issues I had at the beginning?
Yeah, I did. I did, actually. But it's just because I was reading it so fast, because it was just so dull. Like, if nothing else for me, the book was just boring as hell. Like, I thought that this was supposed to be a really good introduction to the X-Men, and it was a really good introduction to a new version of Jean Grey. There really is no other way to put it. And
a less likable version of Jean Grey.
Yeah, yeah. It's just like, wow, if this chick becomes the Phoenix, then you know what? The Marvel Universe might as well end, because I don't need it to come back. So, yeah, this is not a good book at all. Like, so far with these season ones, it's a ginormous epic fail.
Well, this is the only one you read, though.
True, but the other one, because of the fact that it's Roberto Aguirre-Sacasa, you know, is just makes it an epic fail in my book.
Yeah, well, I didn't think it was as bad, though. So, I mean, but anyways, it certainly wasn't as bad as this. Not great, but not as bad as this. Keith, what do you think?
Oh, what a suck fest. I had a lot of problems with this book, and yeah, it's interesting listening to you guys put some verbiage to it. The focus on Jean Grey, I mean, these are supposed to be introductory books, so why are you focusing on the one character that doesn't appear anymore? Really getting to know this character that hasn't been alive in years. You know, if you're going to do this book, it should be Cyclops as the lead character, because he's still he's the only one that's still a main character. You know, him and Beast, maybe. Beast appears, you know, the second most after Cyclops, but, you know, Cyclops is one of the key characters in the Marvel Universe right now, and he's such a nothing character in this book. I find the whole season one concept is so flawed. It's, you know, they're updating these origins, but it doesn't actually help you understand anything that's going on now, because it's focusing on characters that aren't even around in some cases. And the, you know, the idea of $25 introductory books is the most ludicrous thing.
80 pages is too much, too.
It's 130. Like,
yeah,
well, because, well, story,
but,
yeah.
But still, it's 100 pages with the.
But this is two books in a row that, for seemingly no reason, they've put in a very specific pop culture reference that isolates this in time. I complained about this in the Fantastic Four season one, where they made a reference to Mad Men that was completely unnecessary, but then requires that story to have taken place somewhere between 2007 and now. And it happens again on the first page of this book. Jean Grey has an iPhone, which was put on the market in 2007. That time must not be coincidental now. And I was joking on Twitter that people lost their minds about four Robins in 5 years. This puts every single X-Man that has ever been in 4 years.
Not to mention everyone that was killed.
And Jean Grace died like 6 times in 4 years.
It's stupid.
And there was no reason to isolate it like that. I mean, I have no problem with...
But you know what? That said, by the time that it's 2025, if this is still her origin, at least you could say, well, of course she's died 6 times. She's been around for 18 years.
Well, she'll be back 2 or 3 times by then. It seemed unnecessary. Like, again, an unnecessary note, to put it that specific. It took me out of the story, because then I start doing the math. Like, why did you pick then? Like, why not? It was the same problem we've talked about in the Spider-Man Chapter 1 series that happened, where they kept having references to email and versions of Windows and things that just isolated it in time in a way that you don't even do with monthly books. So why are you doing them in something that takes place in the past? And the disjointed nature of the storytelling, at times going from the modern time of Jean Grey's first few days at the school to 3 weeks later, sometimes page by page. There was no flow, there was no pacing to this book. And then it doesn't even keep up. It starts going 5 pages in one time zone and a timeline, and then 6 pages in the other one. It's incredibly disjointed. I had trouble following and figuring out why I was seeing different events. And then, it doesn't go anywhere. It just mercifully stops at a certain point.
Yeah, it just stops dead. Like, there's just, it might as well not have an ending at all. Like, okay, whatever.
Chris?
I have to say all those criticisms are very valid. I'm going to use my time here just to speak to the fact that I still don't get what these season ones are all about. The truth, the flaw, I believe, is Marvel origins have always sucked. DC, with the exception of The Flash, of course, they have well thought out origins. You have Batman and the death of his parents. You got Superman from Krypton. Stan Lee was not much on origins. He usually had a radioactive bug bite somebody, or cosmic rays, or in the case of the X-Men, I don't know, let's make a mutant. Really, the origins were a second thought. It was all about characters with Marvel, which is why I've always loved Marvel, that it's been about the characters. Highlighting these origins in a $25 book does not seem like a good way to sell the characters to me. I just don't get... And then we put writers, basically unknown writers on these books. I don't get what Marvel's trying to do here. I mean, it would be one thing to have Greg Rucka or even Bendis recreate these origins or explain these origins, but these books are just coming off as so lazy.
I definitely think you're right on with that, Chris. Absolutely. Absolutely. And how come Jean Grey keeps on referring to Professor X as the creepy dude? Of course, I only got 8 pages in, but she says it like 3 times. She like hates him and doesn't want to be there. Come on, she's a bitch. You guys want to know who Jean Grey really is? You guys want to get, if you listeners, anybody out there wants to get the best Jean Grey and understand this character and why she's the soul of this, read the issue Uncanny X-Men 308, where she proposed to Scott Summers. While the X-Men, no fighting or anything like that, character-driven story. They gather for Thanksgiving. They play some football, touch football. It's an awesome issue and one of the best issues of anything I've ever read. So John Romita Jr. and Scott Lobdell. So that's how Jean Grey should be written. That's the Jean Grey I want to remember, not this. Chris, why don't you move on to our last book of the week?
I will if somebody will tell me what it is.
Saga.
Oh, Saga.
Or
yeah,
or
no, no, I just forgot it.
Well,
I
X-Men
actually,
season 1 makes everybody forget.
Yeah, best book of the week, although considering our reviews so far, that's not saying a hell of a lot. This book created a world that I want to see more of. Did I love it? No. The characters with TV heads I found sort of confusing and really hard to relate to. But that said, there was enough mysterious stuff going on. I really want to read a second issue. Yeah, no, this is a world I definitely want to experience more of.
Yeah, I'd say this book was really, really good. I wouldn't call it excellent. I'd say it was really, really good, though. I do think that the fact that you have all these different species who obviously have this backstory and culture to them that's not really explained to me did hurt it, and that's one of the reasons I wouldn't consider it excellent. But I do think the dialogue was really good. The characters were really good. There's a lot of interesting stuff going on here. I just felt like I was maybe missing a few parts. It did help that it was 47 pages or something like that, or 46 pages. What was it? It was longer. That actually did help in drawing out some of the characters and situations. But, yeah, there's a lot of subcultures and species and things that are referenced that I don't know about yet because it hasn't been introduced to me in an easy-to-digest manner. And I'm going to say this as well. I've mentioned before, I think Image is the new Vertigo, and I think this is an excellent example of that. I do think that Image needs to do a much better job of in their marketing, especially in the covers and in the books and themselves, of letting readers and potential parents know that their books contain mature subject matter. I think that's something they're missing out on. I think that's something they really should look into, just being more aware and how they present that to potential readers. So that's a criticism for Image as a whole, because everything right now is – well, very, very, very mature slant, it seems, coming from them. Brett, what'd you think?
Well, this book made me cry. And the reason that it made me cry was because at the end of it, I just realized that as much as I may want to read issue 2 and 3 and 4 and 5, I know that I need to wait for the entire series to finish its run, because with Brian K. Vaughan, I mean, his books always have a finite ending, you know, like a 75 issue arc kind of thing. And I know that I need it to end for me to read it and truly get the entire story. So I really liked the first issue. It was a great setup, but I really just wanted to exist in its entirety for me right now, because I love his work, and when he does things like this is one of those throwbacks to that 80s sci-fi kind of run that Starlin or somebody else would have done, and it's just like, oh, so good. Thank you so much with that mature element. And it's, but I won't read it again until it's finished. So, you know, it'll take me forever. And that makes me cry.
In some ways, I felt the same way about Saucer County, though not quite as emotional. Or county or country?
Country.
What was that? I can't remember now.
Country.
Country. Well, there you go. That's what I said. Mm-hmm. Keith?
Well, this was probably the most hyped book of the year, you know, even more than AVX, really. You know, AVX got enough cynicism. That going into it, I actually kind of felt like I had to ramp things down with my expectations of how good this book would be. And as I was reading it, I just kept thinking, it just is that good. It's so well done. It's, you know, teasing out the characters, but you're learning as they go. You're learning about the characters through their actions, as opposed to And a narration, a really, really innovative narration technique, including that storybook-looking text on the page that actually reminded me of Demetrius, which not yes on was it Moonshadow that had that?
Moonshadow.
Yeah, it really.
And that was all Fiona Staples. I mean, I can't say enough about Fiona Staples' work on this book. I mean, I didn't mention it in my review, but her work is amazing in this book.
Yes, terrific work. And I think the characterizations were excellent. I didn't. My issue wasn't with the characterizations of the individuals. It was with the ability to explain the cultures of the societies. And also when they're mentioning things like wedding bands and dogs and all this stuff, and yet it's taking place in these alien space worlds, and if they're mentioning things very human, I found that a little odd too. It's like, what is it? Is it someplace else or is it here?
And I think for me, I was patient on that stuff, that I'm okay to find that out a bit at a time. And because really it focuses down on these
If they didn't
characters.
Make such a big issue out of it, I think I would have been too. But it was such a big part of the book that I felt like I was losing some of the narrative because of how it was presented that way. It's much of the same idea, whereas even though it's 47 pages, I felt like here it is again. This is act one of a two-hour movie. Really should be a self-contained story to some degree itself. And there's nothing self-contained. Better job than Saucer Country on this. But I do think that's, again, it's just the idea that because they're now, it feels like everybody's writing for trades, you know, or for writing for these long storylines, and nothing is self-contained, nothing can come into and just appreciate it. And even number ones, I feel like they're missing that now. I can understand that in the middle of a run, but even number ones, I don't feel like they're giving me that jump on point to the way that they used to.
Well, and it's tough because, I mean, certainly after the first few issues, I didn't read Y month to month. I trade weighted on it. And I'll end up doing that on this book as well. I'll probably get them six issues at a time. It's going to be tough, you know, now with being more active on Twitter to not get stuff ruined. Trade weighting is much harder now. But Image flips their trades much faster. So, I'll be trade waiting on the book, but I think there's a lot of meat here.
Yeah, it is really well done. There's no question of that. Let's go out here. We're getting late. Brent, why don't you, as we go OUT, Brent, any last books or stories or artists or anybody else that you've thought of that you want to mention and any plugs or anything else? Let's go around the table, starting with you, Brent, finishing with me.
All right. Well, I'm going to quickly bring up one of my guilty pleasures, the fantastic character of Kazar.
Yeah.
I love that character. That was a great run in the 80s.
Who the hell? What was his name? Bruce Jones? Who wrote great Kazar run that went, an awesome art. And one of the first direct market books. And so they were able to go a little more mature. That they did. It was almost an experiment, and man, that was awesome. One of my favorite books ever, too, Brett. Thanks.
I've got to mention Johnny the Homicidal Maniac. Yonan Vasquez created the most warped and twisted character of all time, but man, did I ever laugh. And so I love that stuff. But for me, I'm Brett, B-R-E-T-T, at WeTalkPodcast.com. Brett_WeTalk. And oh man, I just don't know anything anymore. So that's about as good as it gets for me right now.
Keith, go ahead.
Well, I am Keith at WeTalkPodcast.com. If you want to drop me an email, I am Cub Reporter K on Twitter, where you can get a hold of me, tell me that you didn't like what I said about your book, and then we'll have you on the show to correct me. That's our new policy. Writers can come on and tell me that I was wrong about their book. And
yeah, so even if you have a positive review, come on, tell him he was wrong.
That's right. Come on and say that sure, the quality was what I said, but my reading of the book was completely wrong. I think I was disappointed that I was only able to say Booster Gold twice in this episode. If I'm really going to summarize me and let the listeners know who I am, really should have put more Booster Gold focus there.
All right. I guess I'm next. I'm Chris at We Talk podcast.com and Chris_WeTalk on Twitter. And I'd like to announce a blog. The first blog entry I have is In Defense of Red State, which I'm sure my fellow WeTalkers will love to ridicule me on.
Well, Chris, I can tell you right now, yours is going to be point and I'm going to be counterpoint. I will rebut it, and it'll both go up on the website. I can't wait to read yours.
And that's it for me.
All right. I'm Mo underscore WeTalk. M-O underscore WeTalk. No E on my name. Mo at WeTalkPodcast.com. I also do a WeTalk Wrestling. WeTalk Wrestling, the number one show on Podomatic. 15,000 shows, number one overall. At least yesterday it was. Today slipped to number two, and I blame you guys for not downloading anymore. But, of course, you can also find We Talk Wrestling over on We Talk Podcast, which is where we should be getting our show. That's the best place to get our stuff, our blogs, all our stuff. We Talk Podcast, two parts, and it'll also be in one part. Or We Talk Wrestling, two parts, also be in one part. 6 hours, best of. Why? Because it's the best of. I'm talking 6 hours, the funniest crap to ever hit the internet. And some of the most interesting as well. Now, I'm just going to mention quickly some books that that I didn't mention. The Kid Who Collects Spider-Man, issue 248 of Amazing Spider-Man. 8-page storyline, maybe the best little storyline ever. It's right up there. Hellshock, absolutely. Jay Lee, the book that the lost book, greatest lost book maybe of all time for me, or Lost Soul. Power of Shazam, best Captain Marvel story I've ever read. Jerry Ordway, the one-shot that reintroduced the character into the DC universe in many ways. Art and storyline is fantastic. We're going to talk about J.M. DeMatteis. I'm going to talk about Seekers into Mystery, a Vertigo book that lasted 15 issues. Book about an alcoholic finding his soul again. As good as anything you're going to read from DeMatteis. keeping going on, Beasts. This was a storyline in Justice League of America. Issues, I think it was 221 to 223. That's one of my favorite little storylines. Fantastic. So I think, oh, yeah, and I'm going to mention Crisis on Earth Prime. By Roy Thomas, crossover that went between Justice League of America, All-Star Squadron, and Justice Society of America. Another great read. That came out before DC, the Crisis on Infinite Earths or Crisis on Earth Prime, whatever. This was Crisis on Earth Prime. This happened before Crisis, the Crisis that rebooted the universe. So it's really, really fascinating and a great read. And other than that, I'm just going to say for Keith, Booster Gold. And for me, Never Read Sandman, OUT.
Booster Gold sucks.